Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I have figured out the bachelor hack, which is get to do the show, but not actually have to do the show.
If you've wanted yet feared to do work that is weird, this is the show you just need to hear.
Hi, I'm Sam Balter, and this is Weird Work. Today, we have a special extended interview with that guy you just heard from. You might remember him as the Bachelor contestant too afraid to kiss the Bachelorette. Or maybe you've heard his voice on local Nashville radio. But his latest gig has him manning bar on the summer TV show Bachelor in Paradise. And the bar is open. Wells Adams tells us what life was really like behind the bar in Paradise, how he ended up on The Bachelor in the first place, and gives us a bit more insight into his scandal that rocked the show this summer. We even come up with a spin-off show for Wells. And I'll give you a hint. It's a lot like that place where everybody knows your name.
Now let's listen to them speak about their jobs, which are quite unique. Weird Work.
Okay, so how would you describe The Bachelor in Paradise to someone who has never seen the show before?
I would say it's like adult camp with very pretty people, alcohol, and fun dates where calamity ensues every week on Monday and Tuesday on ABC.
Okay, so adult camp with calamity and alcohol. Those two seem to go together well. Is there an objective to the show?
Well, I think the underlying objective is to be entertaining. I think that the mission statement of the show probably is to find love amongst the drama in Mexico.
And what is your role on the show?
This year, I became the bartender. I replaced Jorge as kind of the resident bartender slash therapist slash puppeteer.
So, guiding people through the drama and the calamity, all while serving drinks.
Yeah, jackass of many trades.
Jackass of many trades. That's a really – okay, that seems like a good way to describe this episode potentially. So do you have any bartending experience?
Yeah, I mean, I bartended, when I was in college. I waited tables and bartended a little bit when I got out of college. I actually had done it before the show. I took like a refresher course.
Yeah.
Mainly because when I bartended, in college and then post college, I wasn't making a lot of beach drinks, you know, wasn't a lot of blender work. The great thing about my experience in Mexico was everyone was so terrified of the carb and the sugar that I really only made like three drinks, which were all basically skinny margaritas.
So no one was like asking for like the scorpion bowl with five straws coming out of it, like a pound of sugar.
No, I mean, I think I probably made like three pina coladas, four daiquiris. I probably popped like seven beers, like six of them were for me. The rest was like tequila soda splash of pine, tequila soda splash of Sprite, tequila shot. That was it.
So this wasn't even like a Wednesday night at a dive bar level of busyness.
It was very busy. It was just like very simple, straightforward drinks.
Okay.
So I didn't have to open up my bartending for dummies book ever.
And so you were doing everything in the bar, right? Cutting limes, all the so you were an actual bartender.
The typical how to, you know, prep your bar. I had to cut all the produce. I had to stock my bar, which I had to go up and down from the, because I was the beach bar guy. So I'd have to go up to the resort and get all my alcohol. I had to stock my ice. And then The thing that they didn't show, which I thought they would because they filmed a lot of it, was art department had specific glasses they wanted us to use, and they had to be plastic glasses because we were down the beach and you wanted anything to break and then have to walk through you know, glass in the sand. So there was a limited number of glasses I had to use. So I would like have to like walk around the beach a lot and find glasses and then like go and clean them so they were ready for like the next use. And I got annoyed. Like Jorge would have never said this because he was a nice guy and he is like wasn't really a part of the world, but like I would get annoyed with all these people because they're like my friends and like I've known them now for a while. And I'd be like, you don't get another drink until you bring me back your glass.
So you were like, so you went from like sort of being a bartender to being like that grouchy host friend who's like, like, could you please clean up your shit at my house? Stop leaving your things around or tracking mud.
Yes. Like I was like everyone's mom that was just like, grow up, Peter Pan. Like, let's get it together. If you want another drink, then you're going to have to act like an adult.
Did you, when you kind of moved from like being on the shows to being behind the bar, did you feel like looking back, you were like, oh my God, I was such an asshole back then? Or like, were you doing similar things or were you bringing your cups back to the bar and doing things like that?
You know, it's funny, like when I was on Paradise as a cast member, I only drank beer. And it was funny because this year no one drank beer. And I would tell people how stupid they were being because, you know, you can drink beer kind of all day and not look like just a hot mess.
Yeah.
But if you're drinking tequila all day, like you're like 4 hours in, you're going to be just like a dumpster fire. And so when I was on the show, I only drank beer. So I wasn't like a problem when it came to like extra glasses and stuff.
So you fortunately handled yourself well. So people get like pretty shitty on these shows, like just drunk. Did you have to do like the bartender thing and be like, I think you've had enough?
Well, I don't know if you remember, but there was kind of like there was a scandal that happened on this season where we had to shut down the show because there was talk of like misconduct and everything. And kind of the genesis of all of that, was alcohol. People were concerned that other people weren't, being responsible and in control of themselves because they were overserved.
Yeah.
So What happened going like forward after the shutdown and the restart was that like I had a binder where we made a rule that you could only have two drinks an hour, and I would like mark down how many drinks you had. And like a lot of times people would come up and I'd be like, hey, sorry, man, like you've already had two drinks this hour. You got to wait 20 minutes. But then I also did the thing. I remember I wasn't there for the scandal or the sexual misconduct.
Yeah.
Of the show. But I was there that day that it happened, and I was there when people were getting turned up. And I remember telling people that they needed to slow down, and then I actually even remember a couple times making them fake drinks because I was just like, "You're gonna look like such an idiot on TV. Like who? I wouldn't be a very good friend if I didn't like make you guys fake drinks." So there were a couple times when I'd make these stupid idiots they were just like water. I just put it in a shaker and like chill it. And then they would shoot and be like, ooh, it burns. And I'd be like, you idiot, that's water.
Yeah, like I have 100% done that for friends. Like, especially I have one friend who just loves gin, like gets lost in gin like it was water. And like, I just like be like, oh, let me make you the next one and just cut it with like a tiny bit of gin and mostly water to save people.
Yeah, I definitely did that a good bit, but I only did that before the shutdown. After the shutdown, I mean, everyone was fine.
I like this binder idea. Sounds like a good idea just for the normal world, potentially. Like to just extend limiting consuming like an enormous amount of drinks. Maybe not two an hour. That seems a bit aggressive, but like, yeah, just keeping people away for a bit.
You'd be surprised how easily you can still get drunk off two drinks an hour, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess like you're there all day for the, I mean, people are there drinking at the bar for quite a while on the show.
you know, you wake up and you're hungover, right? So you usually go like have a little hair of the dog to like kind of cut the edge. And then if you've got like a date that day, then you're like, oh man, I'm going to be kind of like the star of this episode. This kind of freaks me out. I'll have another drink. And, you know, it can get away from you rather easily.
So I guess that brings me to a good point. Like, walk me through a day in paradise from your perspective.
Well, my perspective was a lot different than the people that were actually on the show. I lived off site. I lived in this little town called Sayulita, which was like maybe a 7-minute drive from where we shot. And I would get a call, let's say the night before, I would get a call. I was on a text chain with all the producers and they would be like, hey, we need you on set at 11 a.m. tomorrow. Be like, okay, great. 11 a.m. would come. I would walk down to the street and someone from transportation would pick me up and they'd drive me onto set. I would get mic'd up. I would usually have like a powwow with a producer just to like explain what was happening, only because I wasn't living there. So I had to be kind of brought up to speed, whether it was like, hey, you know, Lacey's grandfather passed away, or like, hey, so-and-so left last night because they got into a fight with so-and-so and like, they just don't want to be here. And it was just kind of like to explain what I missed when I was gone.
Yeah.
And then they would usually kind of give me a rundown of like how the day was going to go, just so I wasn't shocked. They'd be like, there's going to be 3 dates today and someone new is going to come, just so you know. And sometimes there would be like a little direction being like, so-and-so is like having a really rough morning. If you could maybe try to make them feel a little bit better, or remind them of these things, then that would be cool. And then it would be like, now go. And then I would be on the show. And then I walk down and I would open up my bar and they would kind of like, I think kind of keep people away from me for a little bit until I got it set up. And then, you know, once it was like announced, like I think producers would go tell all the people, hey, Wells is here. The bar's open. You know, then it would be like, oh, people would immediately come to say hello just because they were friends with me.
So yeah, it sounds like you're actually really good friends with a lot of these people off the show and on the show as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think I had a really good relationship with everyone from The Bachelorette, the first show I was on. And I think that had a lot to do with, I don't think I was ever really a threat to anyone to win the girl.
Oh yeah. Wait, why didn't you think you were a threat out of curiosity?
Well, like even watching it back. Well, I mean, like if you watch my season, like I was the guy that took the longest to like kiss her. Like I wasn't like, I think it was pretty evident. Like I wasn't like super romantically like invested in her.
Yeah.
I think everyone was just like, oh, well, this is like just comic relief. Like we love having him around because there's no way that he's going to like come and steal my girl.
Yeah. Like you're just like the good, you're like in friend zone, going to stay there comfortably. No one's really worried.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's how it started. And then Paradise last season, I came in so late that like it wasn't really an issue. So yeah, I think I've just always been kind of like a easy person to talk to. I also talk for a living, right? Like I'm a radio DJ. So like me interviewing people or talking to people, it comes pretty naturally. So I think a lot of people gravitate towards me or like divulge things they wouldn't normally to other people just because it's my job and I'm kind of good at like getting things out of people. I don't know.
Just talking to people and like letting them talk about things.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, talking to like musicians a lot of times is they need like their like ego to be stroked. Talking to like bachelor people, it's like kind of the same thing, to be honest with you. But like a little more vanity, which is surprising.
More vanity than musicians. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, exactly. Like instead of being like, God, you know, like your second record was so great. Like the B-sides were amazing. Like I love those tracks that you laid down, the drum tracks on, you know, on the seventh song of the LP is fantastic. Instead of that, it's like, God, your hair looks great today. Oh man, your eyebrows are on fleek, yo.
You look gorgeous today. Damn, did those abs, do you have more abs now?
Like that? Yeah, like when did you not do crunches?
So like, okay, so you've been like a professional radio DJ. How'd you find your way into this job of reality TV, and then just further of like this job as the bartender on Paradise?
So I got a bunch of different radio shows, and I used to do a bit for a morning show I did where I would go audition for like shitty television commercials that I would never get. Mm-hmm. But it was always funny to like talk to my co-hosts about like, it would be like up and coming auditions, and I'd be like really excited about like my Meow Mix commercial. and then I would go and I would just like kind of do a shitty job, like, because I'm not an actor.
Yeah.
And two, like I didn't really want the gig. And then so like the next day, like the co-host would be like, well, how'd the Meow Mix thing go? And I would like never get it. And it would be like, they'd make fun of me because I was like a terrible actor. So same kind of thing, with The Bachelor. It was kind of at first kind of like a bit, like I didn't think I would get the role.
Oh, really? That's really funny. Okay.
Like, yeah, I mean, like how it went down was my brother was approached to do the show, and he turned it down. And then a couple of years went by, and he was still friends with the casting director. And he was like, "Hey, man, do you want me to connect you with, you know, so and so at The Bachelor and casting?" And I was like, "Hell yeah, man! This, if nothing else, like this will be really good radio fodder." And so then I started going through the casting process, thinking that I would never get cast in this show because I don't have fantastic hair and like amazing abs and like,
shh, don't sell yourself short. You got great hair.
Thanks, man. But yeah, then they and so I kind of went through it the same way where it was just like, I'm not going to get this part. I'm not going to like overly prepare and like and come to find out like I was douchey enough for the show, which was great. And then I got to go on. So that's kind of how it started. The bartender thing was a little different. Like, I went on Bachelorette, then I went on Bachelor in Paradise. And when they asked me to do the show again, I said, I didn't want to do that. I kind of had felt
as
like a
contestant again.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, I kind of already done that. I would really like to, I'd like to take Jorge's job because I knew Jorge was no longer going to be part of the show or wasn't going to be bartending anymore. And it was something that it was like, oh, that's an interesting idea. We hadn't kind of thought of that. And it was like, all right, let's just try it out and see what happens. So they let me go and do the show, obviously, like in a much different role this year. And I think everyone was a little nervous. I think really the higher ups were really nervous just because they had never let someone transcend from contestant to crew.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just didn't know how it was going to all go down, and it ended up going down perfectly. And there wasn't any like, hey, make sure you say this. It straight up turned into like, you're actually doing a really good job just like giving people advice and telling them what you think. Just keep doing what you're doing. Like, we don't need to tell you anything. I think at first they just didn't know, you know, with Chris Harrison, it's like, these are the lines, say those lines on that mark in 14 seconds, you know?
Yeah, but your job is just like be a sort of, I don't know, fixture of the show, I guess, but not really too much of a participant. Like, you don't like introduce people and things like other people would as a host.
Yeah, exactly. there was a little bit of narration too that I had to do, but we didn't really know how to do narration when I wasn't.
Was that your idea to like transition into sort of that more commentary narration role, or was that?
Well, it was a producer being like, well, we want you to be able to like talk about all this, because obviously I have such an interesting perspective of everything. So they were like, we want to get your perspective of everything, and we kind of want you to narrate, but how do you narrate something when you're really not a part of it? Like, I wouldn't be sitting down in an ITM, which is like that shot where you're like looking straight at the camera.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be like, oh my God, so-and-so is like broken my heart, you know, because no one was there I wasn't going on dates. So they're like, well, how are you going to do this? And so I'd come up with the idea that I wanted to get, it all started with, I wanted to get a Barbie and Ken doll.
Yeah.
And like have an interaction for Robbie and Amanda, because everyone was like, they're Barbie and Ken. So that was the original thought of like, oh my God, your abs look great. Oh my God, your hair's fantastic. Like going back and forth with Barbie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then I remember we had like the art department like look into like getting Barbie, but then you had to get like when you start doing that, it's like, well, that you need a lot of clearance for like Mattel and stuff.
Yeah, so, all of a sudden it becomes like a legal thing just to like hold an object.
Yeah, exactly. So we'd come up with like this entire list of everyone was going to have a different, like a different prop, like Jack Stone. We were going to like, just like paint teeth on a rock. like for Ben, we were just gonna have like a big piece of like porterhouse steak. For God, who else? Russian dolls for Christina. Like we had all these props that we were going to do for this. And then I was walking around Sayulita one day, which is a little town that I lived in. There was like this like cute little toy store. And I went in there to try to find Barbie and Ken, but like Mexican toy stores are just like different than like American toy stores. It's like all knockoff crap. And like I found the puppets and I took a picture of the puppets and I remember sending it to a producer and I was like, what do you think? And they're like, buy a couple of them. We'll try it out today. And I was like, okay. So I showed up on set with all these puppets. And I remember like an executive producer, like a high up came down. And he was like, what the fuck is all this? Like, this is the dumbest thing in the world. And I was like, yeah, you're probably right, but let's just try it out. And then I literally all the puppet work that you see on the show, it took place within two interviews. I did like one for 2 hours, like the day I got them. And then I did like one for like 4 hours at like 4:30 in the morning, like after a rose ceremony where everyone was just like beat tired and they were just like, just see what you can get. And so I just was like improvising all this weird puppet stuff.
Dude, I love the idea of like a marathon 4 hour hand puppets thing. Like,
like if you just watch that scene where I've got like all the scallops on my fingers and stuff, like that was, I was like, I brought like a six pack into the ITM room, the interview room. I was like, let's just do this thing. And like had all these scallops and the room smelled like hot death. And
so you're just like sitting there solidly drinking in this like tired and then with this room that just like reeks of scallops.
Yeah, it smelled so bad. I remember like we had to keep on like shuffling out sound guys and camera guys because it smelled so bad in there. We did like a bunch of different takes and I wish there was like a blooper reel. Like, I mean, they kind of do one, but like a really big behind the scenes. Cause I did a bunch of different things with scallops. Like I did like an as seen on TV, like for 17 easy payments of $19.95, you can have all these scallops sent directly to your house for like Scallop Club of America. and they cut that. Like I did all this stuff with scallops and stuff. And then I did a bunch of stuff. Like I had a chef puppet, and so like there was a bunch of like puppet work that I did as the chef. I think they aired a little bit of it, but there was a lot of like the chef puppet was like annoyed that like Krista was eating all his scallops, and I don't know, there was just so much dumb stuff. Like you didn't see half the stuff I did on that show in terms of the puppet work. But
I always think it's funny like just seeing what the producers even on this show cut away from, because there's things where I'm like, that was fucking gold, and then they're like, yeah, that we're cutting that out, that has nothing to do with this.
I know, it was so funny. Like I know the producers, I know the on-set producers, and I know the sound guys, I know the camera guys, and I know the directors. I know them very, very well, but I don't know like the people that are like editors, like sitting in edit bays, like actually creating the show, because why would I? Like they're in some like edit bay in like Burbank, you know?
Yeah.
And I was doing, we after an after show, the reunion show, they made me go down. This was when everyone thought I was going to be the bachelor, so they brought me down there to do all this press and basically like answer questions about like what had happened on the season and like what's going to happen to me going forward. And I remember a bunch of people came up to me and they're like, oh my God, can we get a picture with you? And I just thought they were just like, you know, normal, like people, like fans of the show. And come to find out they were editing producers, and they're like, you never met us, but like, we love you so much. And I was like, oh really? And they're like, all your stuff this year was so funny that like we just sat and watched your stupid puppet stuff like for hours on end, and we really would love a picture with you because we're a huge fan. And I'll be like, oh my God, like I've made, once you get the
editing. I feel like the editing, like for the editors to like you must be a really big deal, because like they're just watching the same, you like a joke might have worked once, but like they have to watch you do that same fucking joke like 30 times probably.
Yeah, you know, like it's like a well-known funny thing that like if you can get the sound guy to laugh in your interviews. Like, it, you know, it was a good interview because like they're trained to like not laugh, cause that would like ruin the whole thing. So like the whole thing is like, you know, like on SNL, you want the bit to be so good that someone breaks. Like in Bachelor World, you want like the interview to be so good the sound guy loses his shit. But like I figured out like the new thing for me is like making the editing crew like lose their shit. Like if I can do that, then you've really made it.
Yeah, if you could get – that's fucking gold. If you could get the editing crew to lose it, then that's amazing. Because yeah, like I just feel like they're cold, hard people who just mercilessly cut things out. But I mean, that's why they're good at their job.
I'm sure they hate us so much. I would hate us too. Like these idiots.
Yeah, like just had to listen to like fucking nonsense over and over again for hours. Yeah, that would be pretty terrible.
Yeah, and everyone that's like complaining, like sitting on a palapa on a free vacation in Mexico, and kind of getting paid for it, like.
And they're just like in Burbank, yeah, in like a fucking dark room, and they have to listen to people complain about how their life so hard.
Yeah, I'm sure they're just like, screw this guy. He's going to leave the show and go sell like tummy tea on Instagram for like way too much money. And I'm stuck in this stupid edit bay for the rest of my known life. Like, I hate these kids.
Speaking of hawking tummy tea on Instagram, is the social media influencer life like a direction you're thinking of going?
I definitely like held off because I thought it was really douchey.
Yeah. what was unappealing about it?
I mean, okay. So the reason why I held off, and by the way, like I'm not above that. Like I totally sell stuff on Instagram now just cause it's easy money. But,
yeah,
but I held off for a long time because I sell endorsements on my radio shows. Like I already do that, you know? And I liked the idea of my social media being like a bastion, away from, that world. And I liked the idea of like my social media actually being what social media is for, which is like kind of a sneak peek into like what my like real life is like, and for people that like actually like think I'm entertaining to like go find that, not to like hawk them on stupid stuff that they don't really need. So I like held off for a long time, but I don't know, like this year I definitely I've done more of that just because like, why not? Like, what does it really matter? I think at the end of the day.
Yeah. Like you've built up like a big audience and it's something that people do.
Yeah. I mean, and I get it. Like, I can now touch a lot more people than I ever could beforehand. I mean, I still am like pretty selective. Like it needs to be something that like I kind of like or believe in. Like the one that I really do is like the food service. They send you like recipes and stuff. And I just like to cook. So like when they hit me up about that, I was like, hell yeah. Like I like food, you know, like, and this is always like a fun date night too, you know, like you get some food and they tell you how to cook it. And, yes, I will take a picture.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Send me more food, whatever.
Yeah. Like so. That seems totally reasonable. So now you're like starting to dip your toe into the influencer lifestyle.
Do you want to know what I'm doing? I don't know if I'm proud of this or not, but like, it's definitely, this is how I'm doing it.
Yeah. 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 Let's get into it.
I'm taking all that money, every dollar that I make off of like selling my soul a little bit on social media, I put into a separate bank account and I use that money to go buy real estate.
So I just
bought another house. I bought a house like with like ad money, which is like embarrassing. I also put like my show money on that too. But I straight up bought a little house in East Nashville and I'm like Airbnb-ing it and like using my social media to promote the fact that you can go stay in my house. So like it's like this like weird like circuitous like route that like I'm using the social media to make the money, I'm using the money to buy the house, I'm using the social media to promote the house that people can go stay. It's like all coming back around.
Yeah, but like at the end of the day, you've like transferred into like a real like I own a house, you know, like that seems like a pretty cool, you're not just like blowing it on like, you know, bottle service at expensive clubs.
Yeah, no, and I am like completely cognizant of the fact that like this is all going to dissolve away very soon. I might as well like be smart about it and like,
Do you feel like Do you feel like if this is your job now, like, and everybody has to go through the shitty question, like, what's your 5-year plan with this job?
I think I'll bartend again next year. Like, it's a every year type of a deal.
Nice.
So who knows? Like, they might be like, yeah, we want someone else to do it. And I'd be like, oh, okay, that sucks, but I get it. I don't think that they'll do that just because they don't have to like teach someone else to do like all the things that I had to learn the first time around, I suppose.
Yeah. And, you're doing a good job of it.
Yeah. So I don't know. So I think I'll do that again. I mean, like my radio career is like not slowing down. So I'll just like continue doing that for as long as I possibly can. I mean, I realize that like I hate the social media influencer thing. Like that's such a small part of like my real career. It's just like this side thing that like I can make a little extra money on, I suppose. But like, it's not something that like I'm worried about. I mean, the things that I'm focusing on is my actual job, which is radio. And then like, if every summer I get to go out to Mexico to film a television show, like that will be the greatest career ever, where I get to do the thing that I want to do, which is like be on the radio every single day. And then the thing that I like to do, which is like film this silly television show every summer. Like if I get to do that, like I think I've hit a home run.
Yeah, no, I think that would be awesome. And it sounds like it's fun for you to be on the show, like, cause you know, these people, they are your friends.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's so funny when I watch the show back and then you talk to people on the show, they get so upset and, oh, my edit was so shitty. And like, I look like such an idiot. And it's funny to me because it's like, that's what you were. Like, you were that guy or you were that girl on the show. Like, what are you talking about?
Oh, and like, so, you don't feel like you're like, oh, that wasn't editing. Like, you were just really like that. And it was just like hard to imagine it.
Well, yeah. And I think that me having been in radio for the past 16 years, like I've learned to self edit, right? Like I don't want any FCC violations. So I like have figured out like what to say and what not to say and like how to say the things that I wanted to say, but like in a PG-13 way. And a lot of people can't figure that out. So like me doing those television shows have always been super easy because it's like, okay, well, I know how to not look like an idiot because every day I walk into my studio and like fire up my mic, I have to like remember like, there are a lot of people listening and I can't look like an idiot. And so I don't know, like for a lot of people, they are scared to like go back on those shows, but like I gravitate towards it because it's very easy for me to not look like a douche canoe.
Do you like being more as like a fixture of the show or as a contestant on the show?
So funny, you know, there was like this big campaign for me to be the Bachelor this year and a lot of people wanted me to be the Bachelor. And no one understands that like that's not the gig, like that's not the best gig you can ever get. Like, yes, it's like for a year and a half you're a big freaking deal and you know you get to, oh great, you get to have 26 girls like fawn all over you, but the gig is the bartender. Like I get to go to I don't ever have to get engaged at the end of it. Like I get to go film, you know, arguably like one of the most popular television shows that airs all summer. I get to like continue to do it. And like, there are no like real repercussions for me other than the fact that like people think I'm hilarious at the end of it, you know, like, so when everyone was like campaigning for me to be the Bachelor, I was like, yeah, okay, but can I still be the bartender in the end? Like, what happens here? Like, do I still get to go to Mexico?
It's just so funny that the show's like called The Bachelor and you're like, I would just rather be the bartender. Like, yeah. I'd rather just be off to the side talking to people, making comments, making like just, I guess, tequila shots. It sounds like predominantly is the main drink.
Yeah, that's the gig. Everyone wants. I figured out like I have figured out the Bachelor hack, which is get to do the show, but not actually have to do the show.
Yeah, if you're gonna hack the Bachelor, this is the thing. I guess they just need to create more roles within the show that other people could just jump into.
I know. Like, so my new thing is I'm really campaigning for Alexis to be my waitress next year.
Oh, nice.
I think that'd be hilarious. Be like, you know, like make her, because that was one thing you didn't see a lot, but I did. I would deliver drinks to people because they'd be like kind of like interviewing or like doing like a kind of like a one-on-one chat with one another, and they'd be filming it. And so I'd like bring them a drink if they'd ask for it. You know, I think it'd be really funny now if I have like Alexis go out and like, because she's just so funny, anyways. And like, let's be real, like she's never gonna get engaged on TV. Like, so if she was like my waitress, and then like. When we envisioned this whole thing, it was a lot of like Love Boat, like the bartender on Love Boat. But I always looked at it like a Cheers situation.
Yeah.
And, like if I get to be Sam and like Alexis got to be like Woody, like that would be like the funniest fucking show ever. So like, that's my new thing, is like get another bit player in there. And like, I can't even imagine like Alexis and I's interviews, cause we'd probably get to do them together and we would be so funny going back and forth. Like, imitating everybody.
Yeah, I feel like that would be so solid. You'd just be like locked into the show for a while. You'd have a homie to do it with, which would be super hilarious. And you could like, I don't know, you could pretend to be like a boss figure of the bar.
Yeah, exactly. And then you could I could see like the drama happening where she would like get mad because I was bossing her around, you know.
And yeah, like, and you could like take it too serious, like you're taking this bartending too seriously.
Yeah, exactly. Like there could be an episode where like she shows up late to work and I'm mad at her for that, you know.
Yeah, like flipping out. Yeah, you could be like making snide comments about like things she's doing poorly in her job, you know, like, oh, I saw the way you delivered that drink, real sloppy. Or if she spilled a drink just once, like that'd be gold.
Yeah, like someone doesn't get a rose and I'd be like, well, maybe there's a new position open behind the bar.
Just recruit. Yeah, people can, if they don't get a rose, they can interview to be behind the bar temporarily.
Yeah, exactly. So
okay, that's incredible. So one thing it sounds like you've learned from The Bachelor is just like how to find the best job on it.
Yeah. Everyone was so annoyed when they found out. I think everyone was happy for me because everyone likes me, but everyone's like, oh, why didn't I think that type of thing.
Like what are some other things that you've learned from being a bartender on this show?
The Bachelorette, like I really learned like, I mean, it's a 2-month therapy session. You're just talking about your feelings all the time, right? So I think I learned like a lot about myself, and I learned like a lot about like what's wrong with me in terms of like relationships.
Yeah.
Paradise last year, I learned was I was never cut out to be the Bachelor, because like they made me basically be the Bachelor for like 6 days. And I was like, I'm not cut out for this. This is too much. And then the thing that I learned actually being the bartender, which is like, I think the most valuable lesson, is sometimes people need something. Like sometimes people need you to shut the fuck up and just listen to them. Sometimes people need you to, you know, kind of like slap them across the face and tell them the thing that they need to hear. And sometimes people like just need you to like give them a hug or like let them cry on your shoulder. And then like for the most part, like everyone just needs just like a stiff drink. And so it's really interesting to like kind of to read those social cues and like kind of figure out what people needed out of me, and then being able to execute it. Like, and you saw it kind of unfold if you watched the show. Like Christina was someone who needed a lot from me. And I struggled at first to like give her advice, cause, I wanted her to like figure things out for herself. And then kind of there at the end, I realized that like, she wasn't going to get it unless I kind of like threw it at her really hard. And it was really fun to watch that show back. And everyone was trying to give Christina the exact same advice, and no one was doing a very good job of it until I came in there and said it in a way that like resonated with her. And watching the episode back was really nice, because it was like, wow, like I think I actually helped her, which a lot of people were trying to do but couldn't do for whatever reason, you know?
It's funny because like, I'm not super good at the like, I'm going to slap you in the face and tell you like what you need to hear. Like, I've never been good at that at one, but I'm better at the like, all right, let's lay out the options. It could go this way, this way, this, you know, like, and some people respond well to that, but I've never been in the like, this is what you need, and then everybody, and then they like jump to it. Usually people like push back and don't take advice well that way.
Well, no one likes to be told anything. I mean, the thing that I did with Christina was I straight up just asked her a question. Like, everyone was telling her, like, you know, Dean's being a fuckboy. You deserve better. Like, why are you mad at D-Lo? It's not D-Lo. It's Dean. And she didn't want to hear it, you know? And sometimes to get through to somebody is to, like, genuinely be confused and be like, okay, just explain this to me real quick. And then when they have to actually like verbalize what's wrong and they sit, like they have the words come out of their mouth, they're like, oh, I see. Yeah. He is kind of dicking me around, you know, like,
yeah, I think like for me, that's like a good way to like talk to people in general is just be like, I don't really know, but I am very interested to hear more. Like, even if it's things like related to people's personal lives and other stuff, but I feel like curious idiot is a nice way to go about it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good, that is a good way to go about like interviewing people for sure.
So I don't really have a great segue into this, but I got to ask you about you, Danielle, and breaking that one rule.
Well, Danielle and I, that's a such a interesting, like odd situation to happen. Like, Danielle and I have known each other for years, long before either of us were ever on the TV show. It's just like this like weird coincidence that we both ended up getting cast on the show. And it wasn't like I helped her get cast or anything like that. That was like completely on her own. And it was also a weird thing where we had both been on, we've actually had to gone on dates with one another, like long before the show happened. And
how long did you know each other for?
We've known each other for, I mean, we both lived in Nashville for like over, I've been here for 10 years. I think she's probably been here for at least 7. I mean, we probably went on a date, I don't know, 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
And she's also like a part of like, she's not a part of like a group of people that I know. She's a part of like my super tight inner circle of friends in Nashville. Like, she's also best friends with like my best friend, you know?
Oh, this is like she would be on round one of like invites for like Super Bowl party or something.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. She like 100%, like, if I were to get married, she might be someone that I like tell my wife that like she has to be a bridesmaid.
Like, yeah, like she's wedding party material.
Yes, for sure. Like, got it. I think a lot of people didn't understand that. They were like, oh yeah, they're friends because they're on The Bachelor and like everyone's friends in the back. It wasn't like that. It was like we were really, really close friends. Like, and so that never got explained that well, just because that would be hard to explain. And I don't know if anyone would really believe it, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there was always like that underlying of like, what if, like, we went on a date and like nothing ever kind of like materialized out of it, because I think we were both like, if we do this, this is going to screw up like the tight group of friends that we're a part of, you know? And like, that's always a weird thing.
Oh, and, like, when two friends start dating and it tears a friend group apart.
Yeah. Oh. And that was definitely like a concern. Like, I think we even vocalized it like drunkenly one night being like, that would have been weird. And we like really don't want to like fuck that up.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we were in Mexico, yeah, the great thing about The Bachelor, The Bachelor, Bachelor in Paradise is it allows you to like create really, really romantic experiences, ones that you could never create on your own because you don't have the money or the contacts or, quite frankly, like the imagination to like pull off crazy dates and stuff.
Yeah.
It's almost like this like fantasy world that also can kind of like transcend to the real world. And I remember thinking like, if there was ever going to be a time in which we try this out, like, this is the perfect place to try this out, you know?
Yeah.
Now, I had created the rule, you know, it was so funny how like Harrison tried to like, he definitely like tried to like take my rule because whatever, but like he was
oh wait,
like,
you mean, created the rule?
Yeah, totally. Like, what, so you, I don't even know if you see it, but like when I walk in, the first thing I say is, couple rules. Number one, I'm not here to date anyone. That was really important to say, to lay out, because the whole point of me like being a confidant and like a therapist would have been thrown out the window if every guy was worried that I was going to try to steal their girl, you know?
Yeah. So, and like, you're the bartender who's always there, always a shoulder to cry on.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have worked if everyone was like, this guy's just going to try to freaking steal my chick. So like, that was rule number one. I was like, I'll never do that. Like, that's never going to happen. But it was a weird situation where Danielle was leaving anyways. Like, and also she wasn't like kind of dating anybody. Like, I wouldn't have been pissing anybody off. And we also orchestrated it where like no one saw what we did because she was gone, and no one saw like that we hooked up until, or we made out until the show aired. So it was kind of like this like perfect storm that happened. And she was leaving to go to Africa to like save babies.
Yeah,
and
classic.
I felt like, you know, there was a part of me that always wondered if, like, just wondered if, like, what would have things been like. So I wanted to kiss her. I think she probably also had that same thought. And to be fair, like, I think that she deserved, like, she didn't get to have any romance in Mexico. And like, I think she deserved like a little bit of it, you know,
just a bit of romance before disappearing to go save babies.
Yeah. And you know, it wasn't really touched on, but it was, this sounds really egotistical, but it's not really what I mean about it. It was just the fact that like, no one was allowed to date me. So everyone wanted to date me, not because like, I'm like this great catch, but like it's that forbidden fruit thing where it was like, wait, I can't date him. Now I want to date him. You know, like, yeah. Those girls have lived their entire adult lives never being told no. You know, like,
and you walk in like day one, like, nobody can date me.
Yeah. So there was like a kind of an underlying storyline that like didn't make cut, that like Danielle was like obviously like the best girl there. Like, she's got a heart of gold, she's beautiful, all those things, you know. And then it was like a cool exit that she got to kiss like the one guy that like no one was allowed to kiss. You know, like, there was like a storyline that like kind of wasn't really mentioned that like I thought was, aside from the fact that like I love her and like it was hot and fun to like make out with her. Like, yeah, it was like this cool storyline where she was like, I got to kiss the one guy that like no one was allowed to kiss, you know, like, so all those things like combined was like how that kind of whole thing went down. And I didn't think it was going to be, I did not think it was going to be such a big deal, like, at all.
Like, did you think it would just get cut from the show entirely?
No, I knew it was going to be a part. Like, I remember a producer being like, that was such a Jim and Pam moment. Like, we've all been waiting for that just because they know us so well.
Yeah.
And they know that like, they know our backstory, like, even though that the audience doesn't. And so they were, when it happened, they were like, oh shit, man, that was hot. Like, that's going to be like a really cute moment. And that's what I remember thinking, like, oh, this will be a really cute moment. The problem was, is that the show was devoid of a lot of like, I think, true romance, like in comparison to the season that was on last year where three people got engaged. So I think the audience saw that and they were like, oh, like, this is actually like a genuine, cute love story that we can like grab onto instead of like a bunch of fuck boys and, you know, a couple train wrecks of girls, you know, like,
yeah. Yeah.
But I couldn't see it then. Like, you don't know how it's all going to be chopped together. So I couldn't see the forest for the trees at the time, but like afterwards watching it back, I was like, oh yeah, that was a really big moment. And it was a big moment, which kind of sucked for Danielle and I, because we both kind of got back and was like, man, I don't know if like same conversation that we had before, like, do we want to do this and like risk like screwing up our really, really close friendship and like our group of friends and like, and that kind of thing. But then there was a lot of pressure from just like the audience being like so invested in us that
yeah. I just think it's funny though, like, there's this kind of storyline that's not even really spoken about where you two like know each other really well and like you've been friends for a long time, and there's this underlying thing that just sort of comes out, and then people like notice that and latch on to it, you know, like, I think that part's really interesting to me.
Yeah, it was actually the thing that I liked the least was Twitter. Shut up. Like, don't tell me what to do. Like, don't tell me how to feel. You know, like, I understand that you really like this thing, but like, I'm a grown ass man. Like, let me like figure this out on my own. You know, I thought that was an interesting thing to learn.
Do you pay much attention to that shit? Like of people being like, you should do this, or like all these other things. Do you just kind of read it and move on, or do you ignore it, or does it like make you upset?
I was at an Emmy party with like all these like famous actors, you know?
Yeah.
And everyone was coming up to me, like famous actors being like, what's going on with you and Danielle? You know, like even they can't escape it, you know?
That's fucking hilarious. You think they would be like a little more like sensitive to that kind of shit.
I know, but like they get lost in it too, you know? So all that to be said, like it was a really cute moment and a wonderful one. And I'm glad like it went down, but like everyone needs to just like relax about it.
Yeah. I just really, I don't know why, for some reason I thought when you said famous actors, I thought Robert De Niro, and I was just thinking like how funny that would be if you were like on a red carpet and like Robert De Niro is like shaking you on the side like, what is going on with Danielle right now?
Yeah. No, I think it was Alicia Silverstone was the one that was like, I saw her and I freaked out and asked for a picture. And she was like, oh my God, what's happening with you and Danielle? And I was like, come on.
Not you too.
Okay. You, Cher.
That's so funny. Okay. Well, we know it wasn't Robert De Niro. He's probably interested as well, I would think.
Bob is definitely in Bachelor Nation for sure.
He's 100% tunes in every night. He probably has a separate account on Twitter just to participate.
Yeah, for sure.
So I guess just to kind of like wrap things up, you've been professional in radio for a while, you know, burgeoning star of reality TV show and fixture of the show. What kind of advice would you give to people sort of looking to get into the entertainment industry in general?
I would say do not do it. Yeah, you know, like I knew, I mean, aside from the TV thing was just like an oddity that like, obviously now it's defining me, but it's not what I set out to do.
Yeah.
Like I knew I had my first radio show when I was 16 years old. I'm 33 now. Like I went to college, studied broadcast journalism. Like I did all the things I was supposed to do, and it's still like a struggle, you know, like it's a hard industry to crack into. But like my advice for people, the radio thing is the actual one that's like tangible and like attainable, like being a reality TV idiot. Like that's just a fluke. So my advice for like, if you actually want to get in the entertainment industry and just in terms of radio, like you just have to remember you're just never going to make a lot of money. Like just like settle with that. And you can never like take no for an answer, and you have to do like whatever job they offer to get you like one step closer to like the job you want. Like when I first got out of college, I was very qualified to work in a radio station.
Yeah.
But like I had to like, I did like overnights and I did promotions and interned at a label. And like, I did like 7 million different things that like actually had nothing to do with me being on the radio, but it was like one step closer to like someone like giving me the opportunity. And then I also like waited tables and bartended on the side. Like I just like hustled my ass off. And, like if you know what you want, like you just got to like not take no for an answer and like do everything you possibly can do to make it a reality. Or you can go sell insurance and like live a totally normal lifestyle and like make much more money than you ever would in radio and have 2.5 kids and have a white picket fence and live that life. Like if you want to do the entertainment thing, you got to know that like there's a good chance you're going to fail, but you can't like allow anyone to let you fail.
So if I could just quick summarize for people, it sounds like if you're looking to go into reality TV, probably don't. And if you're looking to go into like radio and entertainment or something like podcasting, just do whatever you can to get closer towards where you want to be. Even if that's all the shitty jobs and all the weird side parts of it, like in between.
I would still say don't do it.
just it's don't unless you like really want to, but also just consider not doing it again.
Yeah.
And get that insurance job.
Yeah, exactly. Unless your dad is like Bob Pittman and owns iHeartRadio, don't do it.
So this is advice. Yeah, that's great. Anyone who's not Bob Pittman's son, like your daughter, here's what you need to do.
Yeah.
So how can people hear about your podcast and your radio show?
Well, I work for iHeartRadio, so you can download the iHeartRadio app. And the stations that I'm currently on are 105.9 The Rock. That's a show that's a classic rock station that I'm on in the afternoons. And then I do a night show on a top 40 station called 107.5 The River. So if you download the app and just search those, you can listen anywhere in the country. My podcast is called Your Favorite Thing Podcast. I do with Brandi Cyrus, who's like Miley and Noah's older sister and like kind of like the oldest Cyrus sibling and like one of my oldest friends in Nashville. And we basically just talk about like our favorite things that week and talk to famous people about what their favorite things are. It's really stupid, but people seem to like it. The link to that is like in my bio and all my social media, which is at Wells Adams on everything. And if you want to stay in my Airbnb, hit me up on Twitter.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Mogul, real estate, media, mogul, star. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I think this is like a bunch of fun. I hope you had some fun doing this as well.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thanks for having me, man.
Cool. It's nice talking to you, Wells.
You too, man. Talk to you later.
Hi. I'm back to ask you one quick question. What'd you think of the extended episode? We love hearing from you guys, so shoot us a message at hello@weirdworkpodcast.com and let us know what you think. Okay, see you next week. Thanks. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.